is Hacker News Daily, a Bree podcast. I'm Mia.
And I'm Milo. Today, Frontier Model Access is moving from lab-controlled to government-brokered. Sony is pulling 551 paid movies from PlayStation libraries, and California revived its 3D printer watermarking bill. Let's jump in.
So two decisions landed almost back-to-back. The U.S. let Anthropic release its model Mythos, but only to trusted partners. And right after that, OpenMind published the system card for their next model, GPT 5.6 Sol, saying the U.S. government itself will decide who gets access.
That second one is the moment I stopped scrolling. Not a company choosing its release partners, the government making the access list. What does that actually mean, practically? Are we talking about a license or an approval per user?
From the system card, it's a pre-deployment review where agencies evaluate individual end-user organizations before OpenMind can onboard them. So it is approval per user, not a blanket export license. They mention national security and critical infrastructure as the filter, but what stands out is the shift in who holds the gate. Normally, the lab decides access tiers. Here, they've explicitly handed that gatekeeping role to the U.S. government.
Which makes the Anthropic move feel like a milder version of the same pattern. Trusted partners is still a gate, just held by the company. Is this two labs reacting to the same pressure, or is there a policy spine we can point to?
The spine is the AISI framework. It started as voluntary commitments, but now it's showing up as mandatory pre-release review. Both labs are operating under the same expectation. For models above a capability threshold, deployment can't happen until the government signs off on who receives the weights or the API. GPT-5.6 is the first time a lab says it in a system card, so it makes the pattern concrete in a way policy papers don't.
So the real story isn't new model. It's that Frontier Access just became a government-brokered thing, not a developer-brokered thing.
Exactly. And the immediate consequence is that for the most capable systems, your organization may need to pass a federal review before you can even open a model card, much less integrate the API. That changes procurement timelines, compliance scoping, and which use cases get prioritized.
It also means the default isn't public availability anymore. If you're not on the list, you're waiting.
So you buy a movie on a digital store, and you assume you get to keep it. But Sony just told a bunch of PlayStation users that 551 titles are vanishing from their libraries, even ones they paid for.
Wait, they paid for them and they're losing them anyway? That doesn't sound like a glitch. What's the actual reason they're giving?
The official notice says it's because of evolving licensing agreements with content providers. Basically, the contracts between Sony and the studios behind those movies are expiring, and Sony isn't renewing them.
So it's not even a technical problem. It's a deliberate decision to let the licenses lapse, and the customer is the one who gets the empty shelf. Which studios are walking away?
The notice came from Sony's customer support directly, but they haven't published the full list of affected titles. The number reported is 551 distinct films, and the deletion triggers at the end of this month.
That's a lot of movies to just wipe. I get that we've technically been licensing digital purchases forever, but when a store pulls this at scale, it makes the whole buy button feel pretty hollow.
Exactly. It's one thing to read the fine print and know you're buying a license, not a file. It's another to see a major platform silently claw back hundreds of titles you paid for with no option to download and keep them.
And the practical consequence is bigger than just one platform. If you're someone building a digital movie collection, this is a signal that any store can drain it later, and your only real defense is physical media.
Right. The Sony example just made that abstract warning very concrete. 551 reasons to doubt a digital receipt. California lawmakers passed a bill that would require 3D printers to embed invisible digital watermarks into every printed object, essentially tracking what people make at home.
And this is different from what they did last year? I thought they backed off that idea.
They did. A previous version got so much backlash that the state Senate stopped it. But now it's been revived as a new bill, AB 438, with a lot of the same core mechanism.
So the surveillance part hasn't really gone away.
Exactly. The bill still requires manufacturers to put a unique identifying mark inside every print, readable only by law enforcement. And it applies to any new 3D printer sold in California after 2027.
What stops someone from just using an older printer or disabling the feature?
Nothing really. That's one of the big criticisms. People who want to evade it can, while hobbyists and small shops end up with an extra compliance burden for machines they bought in good faith.
So what's different this time? Is there still a path to block it?
The key difference is procedural. It's been introduced in a new legislative session, which means fresh committee hearings and another round of public comment. Advocacy groups are mobilizing now because the window to stop it hasn't closed yet.
So, for a listener who owns a 3D printer, the immediate takeaway is that writing to their state rep right now has a real chance to make a difference before the committee votes.
A while ago, open weights models like Llama and Mistral were often catching up to the top closed models within 6 to 9 months. Lately, that open catching up story has gotten fuzzier.
Fuzzier how? I still see open weights releases that look quite strong on paper.
They are strong. The problem is, the gap isn't shrinking on a single axis. In many domains, especially reasoning-heavy STEM tasks, the frontier labs keep pulling ahead in ways open weights haven't replicated yet.
So it's not that open models are getting worse. The top end of closed models is accelerating at a different clip.
Exactly. Think of it as a widening on a specific measure. Claude 3.5 Sonnet was reportedly running at about a 50% gap to the then frontier on GPQA. That's a hard graduate-level science benchmark. 1 year later, models like Grok 3 are outperforming Sonnet by over 30 points on the same benchmark, moving close to a ceiling around 80%.
Wow. So Sonnet was already good, and then the ceiling itself jumped?
Right. And that jump matters for real work. In high-stakes chemistry or biology research, a model that can reliably handle graduate-level reasoning unlocks terrain where you might trust an assistant on hard quantitative problems.
But I also hear the open weights community point to benchmarks where Llama 3 beats GPT-4 on some tasks.
Yes, the story splinters when you look at narrower evaluations. On some question answering or coding scores, open models look competitive. The difference is, frontier labs are putting resources into harder, more general reasoning challenges, and that's where the air gets thin for open weights right now. The UK's last long-wave radio transmitter at Droitwich is being switched off this month. That's a quiet end for a piece of infrastructure that's been running since the 1930s.
What's actually being lost here, beyond the nostalgia? Was anyone still using it?
A small audience, but one that's hard to serve otherwise. The signal reached people in valleys or coastal areas where FM and DAB don't reach, and it carried BBC Radio 4 to parts of Northern Europe. The switch-off means no more shipping forecasts that fishermen relied on.
So the practical loss is real for those users, even if the commercial case is long gone.
Right. Once the transmitter goes silent, the long-wave band in the UK is essentially empty. A century-old broadcast method, finished.
It's a reminder that some technology retirements aren't about progress replacing old. They're about a quiet choice where the last users just lose service.
So here's a tension I didn't see coming. Voters in multiple places are pushing back hard against new data centers, not because they're ugly, but because the local grid literally can't handle them.
And that's the part easy to miss when we just hear backlash. It's not abstract NIMBYism. In some cases, a single proposed campus would need more power than the entire county currently uses.
Right. One source item tracked situations where residents and county officials looked at the transmission study and realized the project would force massive new high-voltage lines through farmland and neighborhoods, just to serve one customer.
And the consequence isn't just talk. We're seeing projects delayed at the zoning stage, or developers told to pay upfront for grid upgrades that change the whole economics.
So the practical takeaway for anybody watching: the bottleneck isn't only chips or cooling, it's local transmission. And that's turning into a hard veto point.
And that's before you even get to the water or noise questions. Feels like the real-world seating map is getting a lot smaller, fast.
Springer Nature just pulled two studies from a Max Planck research group. No press release, no preprint postmortem, just quietly gone.
Quiet removals always make me more curious. Do we know what kind of papers these were?
We have exactly one breadcrumb. They're described as Max Planck studies, retracted by the publisher after what they call an investigation. No detail on whether it was image duplication, data fabrication, or author dispute.
So right now, even the shape of the problem is invisible.
Right. And that's the listener takeaway. When a major publisher and a top-tier institute both stay silent about a takedown, the transparency machinery that's supposed to protect trust simply isn't turning. Someone just posted a show HN that puts model routing directly inside Claude, Codex, and Cursor. Why would you need routing inside the tool you're already paying for?
Yeah, I saw that too. And I had the same question. Isn't the point of those tools that you pick a model and stick with it?
Apparently, the idea is each request goes to the cheapest model that can actually handle it. The project description says it watches your prompt, checks predicted cost and capability, and picks between models like Haiku, Sonnet, or GPT-4 or Mini on the fly.
Wait, so it's not about better answers. It's about saving money on API calls you're already making inside the editor.
Exactly. And that matters because heavy Cursor or Codex users can burn through credits fast without realizing half their autocomplete prompts went to a top-tier model.
So the real consequence is you might cut your token bill by a noticeable chunk without ever thinking about model names.
So the practical takeaway from that show HN is straightforward. If you're running a lot of prompts inside your editor, a routing layer could quietly trim your bill. Thanks for listening to Hacker News Daily.
We'll be back with the next edition soon. Until then, keep building.